Hi there. It's me, Laura Wasser, the divorce attorney and the founder of It's Over Easy, the online divorce service. I've been practicing family law for over 20 years, and I've worked on thousands of divorces, shepherding people through what may be one of the most terrifying times in their lives. Along the way, I often have to remind people to lower their expectations. When dealing with matters of the heart, rules simply don't apply, because all's fair in love and war. So welcome to the All's Fair podcast. Fasten your seatbelts and let's go. Hi, welcome to All's Fair. I'm Laura Wasser.
And I'm Johnny Rains. And today's show is all about infidelity. So Laura, would you say that that's the number one cause of divorce?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, every case brings surprises and sometimes disappointment and sometimes delight as to how people conduct themselves. But I really do think that infidelity is more of a symptom of something else that's going on. And so again, maybe that's like the final straw, but Obviously if somebody is looking outside of the relationship, whether it's a online infidelity, emotional infidelity, like we hear about, or actual sexual infidelity, there's something else going on. And so I'm not going to pinpoint infidelity as the reason or the number one cause of divorce.
What would you say, just from your experience, you know, and it probably changes every day, but at this moment, what do you think is the number one cause for divorce?
Growing apart. So that has to do with communication. That can have to do with financial issues. People say, oh, if you're going to remodel your house or build a home, then you're going to get divorced. Obviously, if a tragedy happens in your family, the death of a child, a sickness, but any of these things cause a couple to grow apart, and that is when likely you will find yourself in an extramarital or extracurricular relationship. And so it's just hard to really say that's what it's because of. And I would say, and I know I'm being super general, but yes, growing apart and not dealing with issues as they arise is going to be the number one cause of divorce. Anyway, the history of how the relationship has broken down is what's one of the most fascinating things to me. And the things people do out of hurt and rage, like setting your ex's car on fire, or we know this happened with one friend of ours, cutting the arm or leg off of every item of clothing in his or her closet, completely inappropriate social media postings. This is the stuff that, I mean, I do like to talk about. And I think if you hear about it and you experience it and you let it wash over you, maybe you don't actually need to do those things yourself.
Agreed. I guess some people just reach their limit though, but then others seem to have the ability to tolerate all kinds of bullshit. It shocks
totally.
Me. For example, speaking of shocking, in the Sunday Styles section of the New York Times, there is a great column that is about social cues. And there is a segment written by Philip Gaines that forces the question, why date someone who doesn't care about your health and safety?
It's, babe, are you trying to kill me? And it's about a couple, man go, where did he go?
To Tulum?
He went somewhere. Tulum, in Mexico.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tulum's beautiful. It's kind of more of a yoga retreat and a green kind of, but it can be a little rustic. And so she said, I'm not going because I've got autoimmune deficiencies and we're in the middle of COVID, et cetera. And then she would see him posting things and sending pictures of him out, no mask, hanging out, bars, partying, taking shots. And then he came back and he didn't test. He didn't quarantine. You know, it may be magnified now that we're in a pandemic, but maybe that's a good thing because it's pretty easy to see. And I think the author that wrote back to this, the person that wrote in, said this, but maybe not as eloquently as I'm about to. Guy's a dick.
Well, he does point out the question, why would you want a boyfriend who doesn't care about keeping you or himself safe? So, you know.
And that extends to beyond, you know, the pandemic. Somebody that's out there having unsafe sex. Somebody that's out there doing things that are inconsiderate and that can put you in harm's way, both physically and emotionally. No, not okay.
Yeah, it's like I was saying about the tolerance level that people have. You shouldn't tolerate that.
How about the next one?
This one blew me away when you sent this one to me. Savage love when divorce is not an option. I don't know why it's not an option, but
she said it's not. So there's this woman. She's been married for several years. And she, and again, it's her writing. So it's her writing her real life experience about the sometimes physical, but certainly emotional abuse that she suffered at the hands of her husband of many years, and the fact that he had and admitted extramarital affairs, and that she wasn't allowed to. She totally got catfished by this one guy that like was pretending to be her friend and said, you should totally do it. You should do it. You should have an affair. So then because she was being so pressured by him, she said, fine, I had an affair. And then the next call was from her husband. The guy totally told her husband. I mean, this woman, again, I don't mean to be an asshole, but she sounds a little bit naive or vulnerable. And I thought that the advice giver gave her some very good advice. I get that leaving a marriage could really make both parties suffer financially, but that's no way to live. And maybe it's very easy for me to say, you know, in my castle here in West Hollywood, but I'm sure you can figure out something. Money isn't everything. Take the right steps that you need to get your ducks in order, but living, I mean, certainly if it gets to be domestic violence, you know, or your health and safety, but even the years of this kind of mind fucking that was going on with this woman, get out, lady. Life is short. Get out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
That's my advice.
Very good advice. I mean, this Mr. Dan Savage, who's the writer and I guess response to this lady, says to detach. But I think your version of detaching is probably the way to go.
And again, just so that it's clear, I think the reason that Dan says detach as opposed to divorce is she wasn't there yet. And there was it was just crushing the thought, overwhelming the thought of leaving the marriage, leaving the financial comfort that she had, which again, both of them worked, so both of them needed to be contributing. It wasn't like she had just married this super wealthy guy. And so detaching, I feel, will enable her to kind of take the next step she needs to take in order to get out of the marriage and get to a safer space. Detach, meaning you could really read in this article how much all of these, you know, things pained her so much. I mean, she kept getting hit. She kept getting back up again. Detach, meaning in the next blow, move on.
You can read that article on our blog. It's from the Queen City Nerve, and that's written by Dan Savage.
It is said that time heals all wounds, but I wonder if that's really true. Infidelity does affect relationships, but as illustrated by the woman in the Queen City Nerve article, many people can make their peace with it. I mean, the question is, how long can they make their peace with it? Time healing all wounds notwithstanding, as Ralph Waldo Emerson warns, beware what you set your heart upon, for surely it shall be yours. In other words, careful what you wish for, and don't necessarily work so hard to make something work if it's not working. In any event, if it's broken, fix it. For better, for worse, and until death do you part are just some of the things people promise when they get married. Today's guest is someone who exemplifies these promises. She's an actress, an award-winning singer, a wife, and the mother of two. She's an entrepreneur and the host of the award-winning podcast Wind Down. And she's also the author of the new book, The Good Fight, which she co-wrote with her husband. She's beloved for being authentic and multi-talented, and today she's going to help us answer the question, does time heal all wounds? Welcome to All's Fair, Jana Kramer.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so excited. It's a good question, though.
I know it is. I've been thinking about it a lot lately because I have a lot of time to think about things these days. Johnny definitely wants me to ask you about your birthday because it's the same birthday as Johnny, December 2nd.
And Britney Spears, I've been told my entire life. Have you too, Johnny?
Me too.
Not Johnny's entire life, because Johnny was already like an adult by the time Britney Spears was born. But yes, for
that's
many
true.
Years.
Yes.
I know. I'm like, okay, I get it. And it's funny because Jamie Lynn Spears, her younger sister, has become a friend of mine. And she's, you know, I'm like, for my entire life, I've almost hated Britney because every birthday, I'm like, I know, Britney Spears' birthday, but it's also mine and Johnny's.
Johnny's.
I love it.
It's kind of nice that you have somebody to think about now who's lower on the celebrity totem pole than you. Sorry, Johnny. Sorry, but you are. All right. Aww. So, Jana, you have two kids, Jolie and Jace, four and one, and they're both with your current husband, Mike.
Yes, as far as I know.
Far as you know. And you're from Michigan.
Yes.
And I did not know this about you. Before you became a singer, actress, entrepreneur, author, podcast host, you were an ice skater.
I used to figure skate for 13 years, and it wasn't until my parents divorced that I had to quit because it was like, okay, I'm not going to the Olympics, and my mom couldn't afford it anymore. You know, she was working three jobs, and it was like, okay, mom, stop. Like, you don't need to keep sending me to skating. It's fine. And then I did it. Then I started waitressing when I was 14 to try to continue on. And then I'm like, you know what? I'd rather I think I'm showing up now for the hockey players instead of the ice time. So I'm like, I gotta, I'm done.
Can I tell you, Jana, by the way, I also am a roller skater. Another really? Sagittarian so thing we have in common, by the way. I just want to throw that in.
Dude, I still rollerblade. Like, I don't care if it went out in the 90s. I'm still like around Crockett Park here in Nashville, and I'm rollerblading around. Like, I love it.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Strong ankles.
Totally. Big thighs.
Okay. And I also didn't realize that you were a country music singer.
I did, yeah. I was, so I grew up singing with my dad. Like, he was in a bunch of bands. And I was working on a show called One Tree Hill in Wilmington, North Carolina.
I remember, uh-huh.
And I was writing some songs, and we were so close to Nashville, so I was flying back and forth to Nashville. And, you know, I gave some of the songs to the creator, and I was like, I don't know if these are good, but will you just listen to them? Let me know. Give me any feedback. And he ended up turning my character into a singer. And from there, I got a record deal, and, you know, I toured the country for 5-6 years, and it was a lot of fun. Like, I had 2 platinum selling singles and the gold
single.
And
you won top new female artist at the CMAs in 2013. That's huge. 2013, how old were you in 2013?
Oh, I'm edging on 40 here, so I'm going to be 37 in December 2nd, of course.
That's not edging on 40. Edging on 40 is like you're 39, you're edging on 40.
Gosh, I remember 37. What a good year that was.
Oh, I'm excited for 37. But yeah, no, so I loved it. It was just, you know, I love music. Touring, I stopped that once I had my second kid. It was just too hard, and it was a lonely life, and I just... You know, I went obviously back into acting, and I release singles every once in a while just for kind of fun, and whoever wants to listen, that's still out there. That's a, you know, Kramer music fan. But besides that, it was a lot of fun, and I still do enjoy it, but it's not where my passion is. So,
and you and Mike live in Tennessee now. The kids,
we do. Yeah, we moved to LA for a couple of years, and then I feel like the industry just changed the last couple of years, where it's everything was on tape, and I'm like, what am I doing here? So right. I talked to my, you know, managers, Mark and Steve, and was like, can I move? Because I can't afford a house here. And I really would like to go back to Nashville if possible, because I fell in love with it when I was doing music. And they were like, go, you're fine. Like, it's an easy flight. If something really important comes up, we can, you know, you can fly in. So we love it. Like, we can actually afford a nice house and have a backyard, and schools are great. So I feel really blessed that we're here.
And you're one of the few actors that we've spoken with over the past 6 months that actually has filmed something. You just filmed a Christmas special for Lifetime, yes?
Yeah, it was crazy because I was up in Canada filming a movie for Hallmark, and it was right all when COVID was happening, and then we got shut down. So we filmed 2 scenes, and then we got shut down. And then with this movie, yeah, I was nervous at first, but I was, you know, I'm like, okay, if they're taking all the precautions, like, I want to get back to work. Like, I need to work for the family. And so we, you know, we started filming, and, you know, every 2 days it was, you know, nose swabs up the nose. And, but it was a lot of anxiety. I mean, we shut down a bunch of times. You know, I unfortunately was one of the reasons we had to shut down. I got pneumonia, which I still think it was COVID and maybe just a negative test, because I've never had pneumonia. So I'm like, I mean, I had to go to the hospital. I'm like, I was down and out. So I'm like, how is this? Like, I've never had this. So I'm pretty sure it was, but, you know, who knows? So yeah, so it was just, you know, everyone's wearing masks. I don't know what half the people looked like on my set, but it was a lot of fun. You know, it was like a nervous fun. Like, I was so anxious, but I was so happy to be back on set.
I love it. Yeah, everybody that I know that's in that world is just going so stir crazy right now. Mm-hmm. And then in 2016, you were on season 23 of Dancing with the Stars. You really are like a Renaissance woman. I mean, is there anything that you can't do? Are you a shitty cook? Just be honest. I mean, can you cook?
I cannot cook.
Okay, good. That makes me feel a lot better. I can't either, but I just, okay. Yeah, Mike does the cooking.
Well, and he says, like, this is kind of a... Well, not kind of a joke, but not really. But I almost divorced him right before, like, the COVID stuff. And I was like, you know, when COVID hit, we probably would have gotten back together because our kids would have starved. Like, I'm not, I would have starved. Like, we would have been eating cereal. And so every time he cooks, he's like, one of the reasons you keep me around. And I'm like, that's not a lie. Like,
yeah.
It's definitely one of them.
Hey, everybody has to add value. Okay. And then tell us a little bit about Moms and Babes Box. I love this idea.
It's fun. It was just, I have a really hard time buying things for myself. I mean, I still have clothes in my closet that are from like, friggin', you know, 1920. And I'm just like, I never wear it, but I just have a really hard time buying things for myself. And, you know, I will buy everything for my kids and for my husband. So that's why I came up with the idea, like, okay, a box subscription for things for mom and the kids. So you don't feel guilty.
Just bootstrap. I love it.
I'm like, it's fine.
And then it just shows up every month and
quarterly. So
quarterly,
fall,
okay.
Spring, summer, winter.
That's awesome. And it kind of grows with your kids.
Yeah, I mean, we had three different boxes, but girl, that's like that whole side of that business is like, it's a lot. I'm just like, so now we just have it where it's like, okay, if your kid's between this age and this age, it's a good box for you.
Right.
If not, buy it for a friend.
Get out. All right. And then in May of 18, you started the Wine, W-H-I-N-E, Down podcast with your husband, Mike. Tell us
about
that.
So actually, it didn't start with my husband. It was started just with me and this other girl, Jen. And my husband honestly didn't want any part of it. And I was like, that's fine. If you ever want to be a guest, like, come on. Like, or, you know, come on the show. And he ended up coming on and people loved it. And I loved it. And it was really good for us. So the lady that was on it, she was just the producer at the time, but she was kind of filling in until we found a spot. And, you know, he came on and he's like, can I do this with you? And I'm like, please, like, I love it. And it kind of became our couples therapy in a way. And it's really strengthened our marriage to be able to talk about things and be so open about stuff. And, you know, sometimes it can affect certain things, but, you know, all in all, it's been really good for us.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because that kind of bridges into what this episode is about. Your most recent episode, Emotionally Affairable, you guys spoke about somebody, not only how unproductive Mike was while you were away, because, you know, how much cooking can he do, but also that there was a kind of a good-looking co-star that was on the set of the movie and he became a good friend. And I guess you guys discuss on the podcast how Mike felt about that, yes?
Well, he was, which kind of shocked me. Like, he wasn't jealous at all. And you know, a lot of people would be like, well, why do you care? Like, that's amazing that your husband isn't jealous. Like, that's great. And I'm like, yes, but for me, and I even talked about this with my therapist last week, I was like, I want to know that, like, I want that energy that, not that he'd be like totally jealous and like mean or not let me talk to him, not like that, but just have a little bit like, hey, this is my girl, you know?
Right.
And a little, like, not so confident, you know, that he's like, well, I trust you. And I'm like, oh, great. But, like, you know.
Right.
I still wanna know.
It was more about him having confidence in you, though, and in himself, than it was about him not caring if anything happened. Like, if anything had happened, he would have been very upset, yes?
I hope so. But then again, sometimes my therapist brought this up. She's like, do you think he wants to even the playing field because of his affairs? And I'm like,
right.
Maybe you're right. And you know, he's like, he says no, but I still don't believe him. Like, he hates that he's, you know, always the one that is the perpetrator in our relationship. So, I mean, I bet you he would like it, but it wouldn't feel good.
Right. And how does it feel for you knowing that you might have that, like, one or two or seven get out of jail free cards? I mean, how does that work?
I mean,
that was a random number, listeners. I don't know anything. Just seven sounded.
Seven sounds good. I mean, a little more, but, like, you know, I would just say for me, you know, I don't know. I just don't think I can. I think I have major love addiction qualities in me. So I have to be really hard with, like, I have to be really careful with that, because even when I do go on a set or when I do get around people, I get very much like, love me, tell me I'm enough, and then I get sucked into that, wanting that person to have those feelings about me, even though I don't want them to, but yet I put it out there. So I have, like, my 20s, I was just a wreck with that. And so now I feel like once I hit 30, I've, like, the last 6 years, I've just been trying to just, like, practice, like, being confident in myself and not having outside validation to affirm me. And that's, like, been the hardest thing for me, because I constantly crave outside validation.
Right.
And then, you know, putting it out there that, like, you know, I should put it out there that I am very taken and that I wouldn't even entertain it. But sometimes I'm like, I want a little like love, you know?
Right. And again, it's also, it's a double-edged sword, but my guess is looking at you, hearing you, listing your accomplishments, you've always gotten that outside validation. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you've been barking up the wrong tree. Like whenever you put it out there, it comes back. And so it feels good. And
yeah.
So between the podcast and your book, which is coming mm-hmm. out, The Good Fight, okay, you and Mike seem to do a lot of introspection, discussing, you've discussed mm-hmm. the past, you've discussed the relationships. Johnny did a little bit of research, and so we know that there it's not always been smooth sailing. So you had your daughter. You guys mm-hmm. got married in 2015. Then yes. you had Jolie in mm-hmm. 2016. And then apparently that same year, US Weekly broke the news that Mike had cheated on you with multiple women. So mm-hmm. you guys separated. Mm-hmm. How do you come back from that? I mean, how does that, how, because I people ask me all the time as a divorce attorney and as the host of this show and mm-hmm. the, you know, CEO of It's Over Easy, all I'm dealing with is divorce. And so people say, can you overcome this? Can a relationship overcome this? Does time heal? So let's get it from the proverbial horse's mouth. Can you overcome it?
I mean, I think anything's possible. And I think something like that we talk about in our book, The Good Fight, is it has to be two people constantly working together and on themselves as well. Like Mike would have never stayed if I didn't change how I treated him. I mean, I mother effed him for the first year. Like I was mean. I was nasty. I was just like, F you. Like you did this to us. Like how could you do this? Like look at our daughter. Like I was awful. And, you know, eventually he was like, you have to forgive me or I can't do this. Or you have mm-hmm. to like start forgiving because it's not fair for me to just be shamed 24/7.
Right.
And I hear that. I'm like, no, F you. Like, and but then I'm like, okay, I have to look in the mirror and say, I have to now do my work to move on.
Right.
And not saying there haven't been times when I've done it wrong. And there are times when I want to say things and I have to kind of bite my tongue. But, you know, for us, it's, why I stayed in the beginning was because of my daughter. You know, I come from a divorced family. I looked at my daughter and she was 4 months, 5 months old. And I'm just like, it's so unfair. And I did that. This is another reason why I stayed. It was like, man, how unfair because of his addiction and his issues that he now is going to tear my family apart. Everything that I've worked so hard for. Like, no. And I don't want another woman raising my child. I just wasn't there. I'm like, I know every speck of that girl and I know her heart and I like she is my child. And so I was like, I'm gonna do everything I can to fight for this family. And you know, it's been a rocky 4 years and it's, but I will say with your time thing, you know, we still have triggers that come up. There's a hotel that I know he slept with his affair girl in and I have to drive past it every day, you know, and there are times when I call him and I was like, you know what? It hurts today. Like it really, really hurts. And it makes me really sad. And I'm about to start ruminating and going down the thing. And I need you just to talk to me. And I need you to tell me you're sorry. And I need you to like, and it's like, he needs to like help me. He helps me stay present. Like what is he doing today? How is he, you know, amazing today? And how are we better today? And so it does. I think time does heal because a year ago when we moved back to Nashville, I sat in that parking lot and I bawled my eyes out. I'm not right. there today. So right. it does, like, I have healed, you know, a year from that day that we moved back. And I think it's just one of those things where, you know, when everything was discovered and I found out about everything, I would think about it all the time. And I was consumed with how and, you know, what they looked like and this and that. And now it's every, you know, maybe once a week I think about it for a split second. And I don't right. go down the rabbit hole. And I just my reminder to myself is just stay present. What is he doing today? How is right. he today? Because the man he was when I married him is not the man that I'm married to today.
And I love that you guys are there for each other. So many people just try to kind of repress whatever the feelings are. But hearing you say, Jenna, that you call him and you go, I'm driving by, it hurts today, and he kind of talks you through it, that's huge. That is a huge communication.
That took us a while too, though, to
yeah,
get there.
But it's, yeah. I mean, and also the idea that you kind of have to move through it before you can put it behind you. Like saying, yeah, okay, I'm not sitting in the parking lot weeping. Yeah, that is incredibly amazing that you guys are able to do that. I'm sure that that's made you stronger. If I asked him, and you probably know because it sounds like you guys talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. Why does he cheat? I mean, there's an addiction component to it, but does mm-hmm. he not feel good about himself and you're not able to make him feel good in that moment, or he's not able to accept that from you, so he goes elsewhere? Because just like when you put stuff out into the world and you like mm-hmm. having that kind of admiration or flirting, he just mm-hmm. takes it a step further, or is there something else? Again, if you know, because I'm assuming this yeah. has been a subject of conversation.
So definitely he is a sex addict. I mean, how he's what he would do to plan out his days and how he would plan it is very addict-like. But also because, you know, his childhood wounds, like he never felt like he was good enough. And whenever he was stressed, instead of grabbing an alcohol bottle, he would need sex. Like his sex was his way of – or masturbation or porn or acting out was his way of – release and not holding onto things. And then also the component of, you know, feeling validated, like you said, or feeling enough. And, you know, he started watching porn really, really early on as a kid. And so that's what, you know, he was like, oh, okay, I'm not angry anymore. This helped me not be angry. This helped me. And so it started, his brain started to say, this is what you need then to not feel.
Right. And to release, there's a chemicals. It's serotonin. Dopamine, something like that.
Yeah.
Something is released when mm-hmm. you have an orgasm, are feeling yep. good, take certain drugs or alcohol. So mm-hmm. he was getting that. As a parent, how do you feel about porn now? And again, your kids are little, but I can't imagine things are going to be much more buttoned up by the time they get to be the age of where they're on phones and iPads and computers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a really great app that, you know, Mike uses for his program. It's called Covenant Eyes. And so that's something where it blocks those sites that he can't go on. And, you know, I think just trying to instill healthy habits in your kids and, you know, being open about it and talking about it. Like, I know Mike had the conversation with his younger brother about it, who's 14 years younger, and just saying like, hey, man, like, don't go straight to there. Like, you know, talk to a friend, go outside for a walk, like work out, do something that, you know, can don't release it in that way. And then I was like, well, I'm kind of a hypocrite for saying that, because every time I get stressed, I'm opening up a bottle of wine at the end of the day. But I'm like, meh, it's fine.
Yeah. Well, they're all addictions. Some are more socially acceptable. I mean, you can't be like, you know, jacking off in public, and you certainly yeah. shouldn't be like, you know, making out with another person that's not your spouse in public, but mm-hmm. having a glass of wine is fine. So we all have yeah. things that we deal with to get by. So in your book, The Good Fight, Jana, mm-hmm. that you guys have you speak about a faith component. Tell our listeners a little bit about that.
So for me, I had a really hard time with that chapter just because I've, you know, with my issues that I had with my father, praying to a father just seemed wrong to me. I didn't connect with it. And honestly, if I'm being completely honest, I was very jealous of the connection that Mike had with God. And, you know, he got rebaptized and he just seemed, you know, so light. And I remember sitting with our pastor, I'm like, I'm jealous. And I like that he gets to feel so free and light while I'm sitting over here still like in my pain and, you know, just like all the crap. And I don't know how to, I don't know how. And I'm afraid the man upstairs is going to leave me and tell me that I'm not good enough and, you know, and not answer and not be there. And I'm going to end up being alone. And so that was just really hard for me.
This is All's Fair with Laura Wasser on iHeartRadio. Our podcast is about relationships, and it's brought to you by It's Over Easy, our online divorce service. And when it comes to divorce, generally there are no lightning bolts or magical signs that tell you when it's time to get divorced. Statistically speaking, half of all marriages won't end in divorce, but when the bad starts outweighing the good on a consistent basis, you may feel that taking the next step is appropriate. It's a very personal decision, and most likely should be arrived upon with the help of some kind of counseling or support. Today, we're discussing the reasons to stay or go with the effervescent, brilliant, and multi-talented country singer and actress, Jana Kramer. Jana, at the top of the show, one of the intentions we set is to answer the question, does time heal all wounds? When it comes to matters of the heart, tell us in your experience, do you believe that time heals?
I really, truly feel that time does heal, and the only reason I say that is because if I was to put myself back where I was 4.5 years ago, I would have said, you're crazy. that's not possible. I'll never not feel this pain. I'll never not feel how heavy this is and how terrible we are. And I never thought that I wouldn't go every single second of the day and not feel depressed or heavy or hate my husband or just like feel the pain or think about everything that went on. But I can say now that since so much time has passed, it doesn't feel as heavy. It doesn't, the weight isn't there as much. I mean, sure, there's moments where I get triggered, but I believe that with time and therapy and two people working on themselves, two people working together in the relationship, the scars can heal. There's always going to be the wound, but the scars can heal. And right. I think that's where I think in time it can get better. I mean, anything in time, just when you lose a loved one, when you lose, like in time, it still hurts, but you know, in 10 years from now, yes, it's going to hurt when you think of it, but it's not going to feel as heavy, in my opinion.
I agree. Let's go a little bit further back. There's something in between losing a loved one to death or something, like a family member, sure, and what you and Mike went through in terms of repairing the relationships. And listeners, for those of you who don't know, Jana's actually been married 3 times.
Well, I mean, would you really technically call them marriages? I don't know. Like, one was a drive-through. I was 19, knew him for 2 weeks. Like, wouldn't really call that a marriage. The second one, yes, I dated the guy for, you know, 3 years. We got married. It only lasted a week, but it was one of those.
That was Jonathan? Yeah. You know, I represented Jonathan when he got divorced from Christina.
Well, you know what's really funny is that when I was going to divorce my now husband, I tried to get you, but I couldn't.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know.
What happened? Was somebody in my office mean to you?
No, they like pawned me off on someone else. And I'm like, look, I need the best if I'm going to do this, you know?
See, well, I'm glad that I was able to contribute to you guys staying together. That's the way I see it. You can't have me. You just have to stay in the marriage. That's what we like to say.
But technically, like I say, like, this is my first marriage because this is the only marriage that I've truly worked to keep together. Like this is like, I can't count when I was 19 and stupid or when, you know, I married Jonathan, who I adore to this day. Like, we're still really good friends. He helps me with my auditions. Like, I love his wife. His wife is my best friend. But, like, we always joke and say we had a great party. We weren't married. We didn't have a...
But at the time, it probably hurt, didn't it? I mean, that breakup. I mean, people that listen to this show are often younger, and they may not have been married before. They're listening because they want to listen and hear about relationships. And I do want to give them the benefit and the wisdom of our experience in that... I mean, breakups hurt. They hurt. When you lose a family member, it hurts. When you have a fight with a sibling or something falling out with a business partner, it hurts. And so experiencing that pain and you know, they say the only way out is through. Feeling it, letting the waves of that sadness wash over you. Again, I'm always going to miss my mom who died last year.
Sure, exactly.
I'm always going to miss her. And during difficult times when I can't pick up the phone and call her, it's even more difficult.
Yeah.
That being said, if time heals, and if it really does just take time, like so many people have said to me, I just want to go to bed and wake up in a year and it won't hurt as bad anymore. But you have to live the year.
You have to live it. You have to go through it. But it sucks and it's so hard. But like I will say, I think time heals all wounds, but it still hurts. Like you're still going to hurt. It's just not going to be as heavy as it once was. And that's the thing. Like, you know, any breakup, like you just feel like the world is over. I mean, yeah, I remember breaking up with Jonathan and being in the closet, just bawling my eyes out, like not wanting to feel that pain. But, you know, now it's like, again, look at how time evolves and how you grow and how you're like, wow, I'm glad that I went through that because I'm a better person now today.
Yeah. And if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger, right?
Oh, that's like my biggest motto ever. Yeah.
That and this too shall pass. So in your book, in The Good Fight, you open up about why you think it's important to be really truthful about the exciting and the more, I'll just say it, crappy parts of parenting, including some of the recent responses you've had to mommy shamers on social media. I just saw your baby boy. He's adorable. But we know as moms, it's not always like rainbows and unicorns. There are moments. So you've been really upfront and honest in this interview. So let's talk a little bit about the mom shaming stuff that's gone on before we get to the interrogatories.
I mean, it's kind of sad when you even say like mom shaming, because I feel like we're just all trying to do the best we can. And, you know, in the very beginning when I had Jolie, I didn't breastfeed. And honestly, I didn't want to breastfeed. And, you know, I felt like I had to because of what society told me. And so I, you know, was basically starving my child because I didn't have any milk to give her. And I didn't know this. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And so I ended up, you know, my milk never came in with my daughter. And with my son, like, my milk did come in. And I'm like, okay, I have to breastfeed. My husband's like, no, you don't. And I'm like, no, I do. Because, like, all the hate that I got for not breastfeeding Jolie. And he's like, and, you know, we're trying to do it, and he's not latching, and I'm just, like, bawling, and just, like, you know, I have my friends trying to, like, press on my boobs, and, like, you know, then I got the pump, and I'm just like, I don't want to do this. And it's like, then he's like, don't. Jolie was fine. And I'm like, I'm afraid of all the hate. And then I'm just like, you know what? After a while, I'm like, I know that I am doing the very best job that I can as a mom. And yeah, I might not make their food from scratch. Like, I might get them bottled, you know, food from Publix or wherever, Trader Joe's. But, like, I'm just doing the best that I can. I know my mom did the best that she could with me. And so I try to not let the mommy shamers in. It's frustrating at times because I feel like women should, you know, empower other women. And if anything, give advice, you know, if asked.
If asked, I'm
always like, hey, moms, what do you think? But if I don't ask you, I don't care. And I would always love more knowledge. Like, that's great about the momhood stuff, but I don't want any other mom. And I honestly think the moms that do mom shame are just unhappy with their situation right. that they're in. And right. I have to just be like, well, I'm really sorry you feel that way, but I think we're doing pretty good. You know,
good. So good for you. Totally yeah. true.
I mean, even like the other day, I was like jumping on the trampoline with Jace, and they're like, "You should have a cover on there." And I'm like, "There is. You just can't tell because of the way that my phone." It's like, why is your first thing to like attack somebody? It doesn't make sense.
Because it is. They're not loving whatever's going on with them.
Yeah,
and so that's too bad for them.
They should call Laura.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I swear everyone in at this part of the show. So, Jana, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
All right, which relationship in your life has had the most profound impact?
That's a really, negatively or positively?
Either one.
So, I mean, negatively, well, I'll say this. Well, shoot. I'm like, first I was going to say my dad, because negatively, I mean, I grew up with just a bunch of like daddy issues, and which I think
right.
shaped, but I feel like then the positive has been with Mike because he's kind of taught me how to forgive.
Right.
And now my dad and I have an amazing relationship because of it.
So that can be like a hybrid. It can be yeah. your dad and like the metamorphosis or evolution of the relationship with
Thank
your dad.
Thank you for allowing that one, Laura. I appreciate
it. Of course. I will allow that. All right. We love your country hits, Why You Wanna, and I Got the Boy. But of all the love songs you've sung or heard, what's your favorite?
Of all time, it's really hard. But what I love right now, I'll just say right now, is More Hearts Than Mine. It's by Ingrid Andress. I think it's really well written. It's basically about getting into a relationship with someone, and she takes him home to the hometown, and it's like, look, I just want you to know, like, my mom falls a little faster than I do. And my dad's going to, you know, check your tires, but he's going to pretend he doesn't like you. And it's like, if we break up, like, I'll be fine, but she'll be breaking more hearts than mine. And
right.
so I'm like, I just love that like kind of concept.
That's a big responsibility. I like that too.
It is.
What's the one piece of advice you'd share with your, I'm going to give you two options, either your 20-year-old self, which is usually what I tell people, or somebody following in your footsteps who's 20. What's the piece of advice you'd give her or him?
Don't get married at 19.
Yeah, don't do all those things. No, I would honestly say don't settle because you feel like you have to do what your friends are doing back home. So if right. you moved or if you're in a hometown, like don't feel like you have to get married because you're 26 and you thought you'd have kids by now. Like I think you change so much from your early 20s to even, you know, 30. It's just allow yourself to grow and do that. Personally, I wish I would have done that more independently and not allowed a man to fill that for me of who I am and who I'm supposed to be.
I like that. Okay. Finally, which romantic comedy could you watch on repeat?
Oh, Notting Hill. I'm obsessed with it. I'm just a girl standing in front of a guy.
Oh, I love it. I do love it.
To love me. Like, I'm just like, oh, how many times? Just love me.
I love that movie too. That's a good one. So this interview is nearly over. It has rocked. Thank you so much for joining us today. Jana's new book, The Good Fight, co-authored with her husband, Michael Cawson, is out now. And you can see her latest film, Welcome Home Christmas, on Lifetime during the holiday season. Her bittersweet songs are available on Spotify and iTunes. And her podcast, Wind Down, is available right here on iHeart and on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Jana, tell everyone where they can find you beyond what I've said here.
You can find me on Instagram. My name is Kramer Girl on there. So
with a K.
With a K.
Okay. So that was awesome. I really like her. She's super cute. I think that what she has lived through in the past couple of years, I mean, clearly she's been there. She speaks about it really articulately in a way that I think people can understand and relate to. Totally owns her part of what's gone on in her relationship with Mike and really is, in my opinion, really realistic and you know, generous with sharing her experiences or other marital experiences or relationship experiences. I liked her. I liked her a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I love, you know, a Sagittarius, so.
December 2nd. Thank you for listening today, everyone.
Let us know what you think about today's show and rate us at Apple Podcast.
We'll be back next week, so let's chat then.
Ciao for now, everyone.